How would he know that if he's never been to a
Yeah,
therapist?
exactly.
There's no way to know that unless he was diagnosed, right? So he has been to therapy, right?
We can find out.
Unless he diagnosed himself on WebMD or Mayo Clinic.
No, he probably did with the AI. He probably did with AI. AI,
With
why
an
are you
AI
diagnosed?
bot, he with the with his own Tesla, with
There
his
you
own
go. There
Tesla.
you go.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only and represents the individual opinions of Dr. Dimitri Bick, Dr. Stefan de Graaff, Dr. Suzanne Mignon, and the guests. It does not constitute the practice of medicine or other professional healthcare services and should not be taken as medical advice or an establishment of standard of care. No guarantee is given regarding the accuracy of any statements and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult your healthcare professional for any medical questions. Please don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe, but more importantly, leave a review on whatever platform you're listening on. Reviews not only help us grow listeners, but also help us grow as a show, improve our content, and make us better.
We are back after a number of week hiatus. I don't know whether it's been, what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that. And we're just gonna get right into it here with the healthcare horror stat of the week.
America has the greatest healthcare in the world.
Deductibles, drug tiers, PAs, and copay. But you can get an MRI today for the low price of just $2,000. America, yay!
No BS, no nonsense today. I've got three stats for you. You guys can choose which one we're going to do. Or maybe I'll just choose. But pick one. I've got a stat on... I've got a stat on the cost of long-acting injectables versus the oral equivalents and how effective they are keeping people out of the hospital versus the cost versus their oral equivalent. I've got a low of on statistics on adult loneliness, and I've got a stat on youth gun deaths, because we haven't had that before on this show. So pick one of those three.
Number one is kind of intriguing me. Number two sounds depressing, but number three is a real deal thing too.
Yeah, number three sounds really depressing too, doesn't it?
Yeah. Let's be non-depressive today.
I like the long acting because I'm biased. I work in an inpatient
in
setting.
A hospital, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
here's the thing about number one. So. Number one is it's one of these insurance things. It's one of these things where the insurance companies are kind of screwing people. So I think it's sort of relevant. So here's the stat. 30-day readmission rates for long-acting injectable antipsychotic medications. 1.9% versus their oral antipsychotic equivalents of 8.3%. Also, EPS side effects, extrapyramidal symptom side effects, were 22.3% in long-acting injectables and 30.8% in orals. The monthly cost of the three long-acting injectables, Abilify Maintena, $456 per month, Invega Sustena, $476.87, Risperdal Consta, $406.43. The cost of the equivalent oral versions, Abilify, $43.13, Invega, $167.18, and Risperdal, $16.94. So what does that mean? They're more effective and they have less side effects, and they're nearly 100 times more expensive. Why is that?
Well, you know, I think that there's a lot of factors that are going into this, and I'm not justifying the cost by any means, because those are exorbitant costs for anyone to have to spend money on. And we know that insurance companies don't always cover the drugs that are prescribed, including the long-acting injectables, and they would rather go with the cheaper oral forms. But when a person is taking an injectable medication, usually there's a history of non-compliance. in my experience. So yes, we could be seeing some difference where it comes to compliance rates, whereas an injection, it's once a month, and that medication is carries over through approximately a month, depending on how many injections the person has had prior, versus a person who is being responsible for taking the oral medication every day or twice a day. Sometimes they might skip a dose. So we might be seeing some of those factors compound the stats too, as far as admission rates and whatnot. Not the cost, but I'm talking about admission rates.
These are monthly costs. So this thing costs $43.
I said cost aside. You were talking about the admission rates too, the readmission rates. And so
right, the admission rates are less for these injectables. So
correct.
The question
and
is
what
then,
I'm saying
why
is
aren't they first why? Line treatments then? Mm-hmm. Right?
So, I think we to be careful. I don't want to miss the point. At least my point. Why are we using long-acting injectable? That's a question. I agree. They're expensive as hell. They're really, really expensive. But the reason why we're using them is to prevent readmissions, right? Those are people that are not compliant with medication. And you want to make sure that from an hospital standpoint of view or for the insurance company point of view, you want to spend less money possible on that patient, meaning you want to pay least to keep that patient as controlled as possible. It doesn't matter how expensive the long-acting injectable is. It will always be cheaper than recurrent readmission. I've had patients come into the hospital on average 3 times a month. And I just read a stat from I think it was ABC articles in 2017, an average cost for an admission for a patient that was in a unit for a week, the admission was about $10,000 for a week. That's an average. Most patients would be within 7 to 10 days inpatient care, and they will have recurrent readmission. So in a month, you're looking close to $30,000, right? So if you are an insurance company, you want to make sure that you're spending less on that, on the patient lives. Wouldn't you pay the long-acting injectable, hoping the patient gets once a month injection, and then if you do in Vegatrinza, which is a 3 months injection, and then now you have the Hafiera, which is a 6 months injection, right? So that's what a discussion should be, right? How do you reduce costs in the hospital?
So who's screwing people here? Is it the insurance company that's refusing to pay for something that may be decreasing admissions and decreasing side effects according to this statistic, right? Or is it the pharmaceutical company that's screwing the patients and the insurance company by charging more for something that is decreasing admissions and decreasing side effect rates?
Why can't it be
who's doing it?
It's,
or
right,
both.
Exactly.
Or it could be both, right?
I was going to say, it's capitalism. Everybody's having a piece of the pie.
Insurance companies are not nonprofits, right? Those are for-profit businesses.
As a certain kind of man says now, come on, Jack. Come on, Jack. Look, I don't know, man. It's another one of these things where it's like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense unless you're the guy in the boardroom going, this makes sense to us financially, but it doesn't make a whole lot of sense on the back end here where statistics say it works and it's more functional and yet the cost of it is ridiculous. I just had a patient who has insomnia, speaking of things that we've just recently done.
Did you tell and, them to get a CPAP machine?
I actually did ask them to go get a sleep study. But before we're doing that, we have to adjust some medication. And in the meantime, I'm trying to get them Quviviq and Belsomra. And I can't give them, because of the medication they're currently on, a hypnotic. And when I prescribe them Belsomra, what they're asking me on those PAs is, did you give them a hypnotic? And there's no question on those PAs because I can't handwrite in an answer. It's just a yes or no kind of thing is, did you give them a hypnotic? Have they taken a hypnotic?
It's not question. An open-ended question.
It's not an open-ended question. It's, is there a contraindication to a hypnotic? And the answer is no, there's no contraindication. But I can't give them that because of their certain medication regimen. So they're basically forcing me to give a medication that I shouldn't give just so that I can get past, you know, a PA requirement. essentially they want me to prescribe a medication so the patient can go pick it up, right? And just say they took it. I'm using air quotes here. When they don't actually take it. Just so that I can say they quote unquote took it. You know, it's a game. It's a waste of money.
Yeah, we knew that.
But they're not doing that. They're actually going to try it. Because now I have to change a regimen that I'm trying to do. But they're asking me to do stuff like this. They're asking me to either completely change a regimen that I don't want to do because it's detrimental to the patient, or they're asking me to commit fraud. This is what insurance companies are asking to do. There's another There's another situation with Latuda, for instance, I had maybe 7 years ago, where a patient had diabetes. And I was asking for Latuda because Latuda doesn't cause metabolic syndrome as much as some of the other ones like Zyprexa and Seroquel. And I called the insurance company and I'm saying, I'm asking for this medication because I don't want to give the other ones because they have diabetes. And they're just like, well, you know, you got to do it. And I'm like, okay. But if I give it to them and they take it and try it and they get worse diabetes, can they sue you? And they're like, well, no, you're the one that wrote the prescription. And I'm like, but I'm calling you and telling you that I need this new one because I don't want to give them that. And they just kind of like, well, you're the one that wrote the prescription. And this is American healthcare right now. This right here is American healthcare. And yeah, I said it. Yeah, I said it.
You did.
And I don't care. No, damn right I did say it.
You are all of us, Dimitri. You are all of us.
You're damn right I said it. And you can quote me on it too, and I don't care. Because this is nonsense. It's complete bullshit. Because
it's complete
insurance
nonsense.
Companies...
And people are stuck with insurance companies because otherwise they can't afford this out of pocket.
Absolutely.
Right. Unless they have millions and millions and millions of dollars.
And they've completely divulged responsibility for it. It's like, well, you're what wrote the prescription. It's like, yes, but I'm forced to write the prescription because your bullshit ass won't pay for it. And pharmaceutical companies won't lower the fucking cost. So, yeah, and I'm not editing out any of the curse words, by the way.
There's no need to, because it's enough to be angered about.
It's outrageous. It's outrageous.
So, yeah, it's ridiculous. And this is a great example of this kind of stuff, where this stuff works. It lowers costs in the future, because if they're readmitted, what did you say? It's $20,000 per admission?
$10,000. Well, that was 2017. That being said, so there's some good people working in those industries. Meaning of pharmaceutical
industry.
I remember I was they're rare. But I've called the company once before. After they told me the exact same thing, they won't pay. So what I did, I asked for a supervisor, and I pulled out the patient's MRN, right, medical record number, and it was a 15-minute discussion, and I pulled out the receipt. Especially was admitted that date. That's how much money you pay for that patient. You are paying for that patient. That's how much money you threw down the toilet last month. Why won't you pay that? Why won't you pay a quarter of that cost next month to at least try to see if you save money on that patient? Mm-hmm. And that person had to say yes, because it's math. You don't have to be a good doctor. It's math.
You got a reasonable person.
Yeah. But am I going to do that every single patient? No, I can't. I have to ask for a supervisor, you know, I can't, you know, some people just follow rules without thinking. So
If you think this segment's fired up, wait until the next one. We welcome all criticism to this show, good or bad. Last week, I posted a video on our TikTok that was from Dr. Evan Longo. It was the thing he said on fear, about how Trump is using fear to mobilize his army of troops. And we got a comment on that from a user named Greened2. The comment is, haha, seriously? Fear-mongering against the orange man? Seriously, the other side of the aisle is just as bad, if not worse. And we get to break this sound out for the first time.
Well, bless your heart.
I was just going to say something. Regardless of what was said on your tweet, the answer, I mean, what he said, there's no correlation to the point that you were comparing two people.
There was one statement, and he goes talking about the other side. I mean,
well, no, but I mean, what else? What else can you say when you're in a, you know?
That's debate.
Anyway, if you thought the last segment was lit, we got more for you, I guess.
Hey, lit. Where you speak?
Good
you
job.
Speak, right there, you go. You're growing younger.
We're doing all the segments in one. We're doing them all. We're doing healthcare horror. We're doing youth speak. We're doing.
I mean, Steph, I could have called you a Karen when you asked for the supervisor.
You could have. Right? Yeah, you could have. There you go. Wow. Okay.
Elon Musk this week, your boy, Steph.
My boy.
Your boy.
Tweeted out.
That's woo.
tweeted out. And I want to get this correct. Quote, never went to therapy, unquote, on my gravestone. And he's quite proud of that, by the way.
Yeah, like I can see.
Yeah. And we've
way to undo everything that we've been talking about.
Right.
We've played clips of him on this show before. And of some of the people that we've played clips of, he's one of the individuals who I would hope would seek therapy.
I mean, and I don't understand the motive behind the tweet. I just don't get it. What is the gain in making that tweet?
I'll tell you this. You don't make that tweet unless someone has mentioned you should seek therapy. So someone in his life has said, you know, Elon, I think you should see somebody. And that is the reactionary thing to that kind of statement. Someone has said that to him. And that's a reactionary thing.
It's not just a random type of tweet that somebody came out with, including him.
Isn't it public knowledge that he's on the spectrum? Or maybe I read
it. I don't know. I don't know. I think that's speculation.
Yeah, I think it's speculation.
Okay, I'll research because I think before Tesla, before all that kind of stuff, when it was actually coming out with Tesla, there was a lot of noise about him having Asperger's, disease.
Hold on a second, Steph.
I don't want to speculate.
Not rules weren't meant to be broken. But what if they're just guidelines? Time for Goldwater. Rules!
All right, go ahead, Steph.
No, I'm just saying, I thought maybe from him or from one of the past interviews he's had in the years. So somebody may have mentioned that he's on the spectrum or he was on the spectrum. I think he said that. I'm gonna research because I think he was saying in that kind of interview, he was saying the reason why he was so into numbers, because when he grew up in school, the only thing he felt like he was attracted to was numbers. So he started coding at a very young age. Actually, I'm gonna research in the interview. And I believe he even said it, why he is the way he is. Because in school, he couldn't play with other kids. He didn't feel like he was accepted. He didn't feel comfortable with other kids. And he was comfortable with numbers.
I don't think it's ever been, or that he's ever formally said, or anyone has ever formally said, that he was on the spectrum. Although it could be speculated based upon some things that he has characteristic symptoms. But I don't think it's ever been formally stated, Steph.
Because the internet is never wrong. Okay, you guys can fact check me.
Okay.
I'm not gonna find the internet. So according, I'm just reading a snippet.
According to Wikipedia.
That's I don't know what website is that, but this site, the Rolling Stone. According to a 2015 interview with the Rolling Stone, Musk stated that he has, quote, a mild form of Asperger's, end quote. However, it is important to note that Asperger's is no longer considered a separate diagnosis of autism, correct? And the term is no longer used in the medical community. So he himself said he has a mild form.
Okay.
That doesn't mean he has autism.
To
be factually correct, it's not autism, it's Asperger. If you want to play, split the hair. So
that's a direct quote from him.
Yes, from him.
That he has a mouth
and a Rolling Stone, and so he has Asperger's. Okay, all right.
Which is not autism.
He has Asperger's.
Apparently,
he's never been to a therapist or anything like that, because there's nothing wrong with him, quote unquote. He just is diagnosing.
How would he know that if he's never been to a therapist?
Yeah, exactly.
There's no way to know that unless he was diagnosed, right? So he has been to therapy, right?
We can find out.
Unless he diagnosed himself on WebMD or Mayo Clinic.
No, he probably did with the AI. He probably did with AI.
With an AI bot. with his own Tesla.
There you go. And there's more of it. I don't want to pound the, you know, the bag, but in 2021, he went on SNL of all channel, and he said that he said he was on the autism spectrum. And I'm reading from the ABA Centers of America, which is a website for the ABA therapists, I guess, right? So he even said he has autism. Forget about Asperger's, okay. Right? So like 2021.
Okay. All right. So it's from your own mouth, Elon, in case
yes.
you want to say anything about
it. You're going by what
to us. Said. Yes. And just so that's known, and if he just happens to tweet about us on Twitter or X, and we would not be opposed to that. Just saying.
Maybe next episode we'll do one on autism. We haven't done that yet.
That's true. We haven't.
So people can listen to that one, to this one, and wait for next one.
Very, very good tease. Very good. But the post that I made, which was on his, I posted a picture on TikTok of his tweet and wrote, "This is not something to be proud of." We got a comment from not_now was, "Yes, shame people into therapy. It's definitely not toxic."
Well, bless your heart.
Was I shaming people into therapy?
No.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I think the tweet was to shame people against therapy, shame people who were in therapy.
No, me.
No, I know. No, I'm saying not you. Okay. I said the tweet itself was almost shaming people who were in therapy.
Right. That's the way I viewed it. But right. I didn't respond to the comment because I didn't want to.
Right. As if there's something to be proud of, not going to therapy. Yeah.
Anyway, there was another thing that happened this week. It actually happened last Friday, not this Friday, so it's a little bit older. But Dr. Phil, the famous Dr. Phil, was on Bill Maher.
I would say the infamous Dr. Phil.
Far be it from me to tell anybody anything about the way they look. Because I look like a frog that decided to grow his beard out. But he
now
looks
I can't unsee it.
I cannot see it. I just realized that.
You can't unsee it, right?
Inside. That's great inside.
Check out our YouTube channel if you want to see it. Wow. If you want to see it, it's a frog that looks like he grew his beard out. But he looks like, I don't know, his face just, it doesn't move now. And I feel bad for him. But what I really feel bad for is that he's become this, I don't know what happened. He was never really a good psychologist. Was he a good psychologist, Suzanne?
I think a lot of the things that Dr. Phil has said have been very questionable, very against what we know in psychology. For a while, I can remember that our organization, our APA for psychologists, kind of put him on the back burner. But then I guess they needed some publicity and invited him to be a speaker at one of our conferences.
Oh my God. Okay.
And that like, I felt like I was on an episode of South Park listening to Mr. Garrison, the teacher, the whole time.
Yeah.
And it was like, no, you know, when, you know, you come out in a book and basically victim blame those who are victims of domestic violence. I've lost respect as a professor.
Yeah. So this clip I'm going to play is from the overtime from Bill Maher, from the, not the last episode this past Friday, but the previous one, the Friday before that. So here is that clip.
Here are the questions. Dr. Phil, do you think President Biden should take a cognitive exam?
If you got people that have nothing to hide, hide nothing, so why not?
Okay. Dr. Phil again, what do you think of the increased popularity of polyamory and throuples?
It's insane.
Really?
Yeah. That doesn't work. I mean, people have enough trouble trusting one another in relationships as it is. If they're going to start adding in moving parts, that's not going to work.
Okay.
It's never worked.
Okay. First of all, this is what bothers me about when people make these pronouncements about the way another person lives their life. It doesn't
you
work.
Ask me.
It doesn't work. But you didn't. But your answer was it doesn't work for me. Your answer was it doesn't work. What
but
works for me?
It doesn't work
for you.
No, it doesn't.
People
work.
Are different.
I've never tried it.
But people have. And other people like it. We're all different. Would you not allow that we're all different and people have different tastes?
Well, no, you're just saying how you feel. I don't care how you feel. I barely care how I feel. I'm talking about the facts. The statistics prove that doesn't work in a relationship.
They have statistics on throuples?
Yes.
But I could throw that in your face and say marriage doesn't work either. More than half of the people get divorced.
That's not true.
Well, half.
No.
And the people who stay are not exactly thrilled.
First of all, Bill Maher is a genius. He's an ingenious interviewer.
Bill Maher is a genius.
He's
I call him a genius, but he's okay. I mean, he's got a good show. I like his show. I'm not going to lie about that. I'd say I'd probably agree with him on like 85 to 90% of the stuff that he, you know,
he doesn't sugarcoat it.
I don't know where to start. Like, I guess Susan and I are forensic specialists. So you want to start with the cognitive part and how bad of an answer that is. And this is okay. Let's start here. Look, this isn't political, but I think this is the reason that they have this Goldwater thing is because of answers like this.
Yes.
This is on a scale of 1 to 10, this answer is like a -1,000. This is such a bad answer.
Yeah. And to make it worse, Dr. Phil went into politics. So is it biased? Of course it's biased, right?
It's not. I don't know if it's bias. That's the thing. Like, I don't know if it's bias because he's a Trump guy or he's just anti-Biden or he's just a bad psychologist and he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Does that answer come from a place of a psychologist or a politician?
I don't know. Like, that's the thing.
I think it comes from his place as a celebrity.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if he's just a bad psychologist
or
he's doing it from political.
Then if you don't know, it's wrong. It should be inequivocally positively sure, oh, that's a psychologist comment.
Right. But it's an incorrect answer, all right? Because the question is so general, it's should he take a cognitive exam? Exactly. The first answer is which cognitive exam?
Yeah.
Okay. Because there's so many cognitive exams. The question is which one, right? Which cognitive exam? Okay. And then you go from there because Bill Maher would say, well, I don't know. It says cognitive exam. And then the answer would be, well, you have to tell me which one you want him to take because there's so many of them.
And I would let you know, right?
Then I would let you know which one I think. And then the answer would be, well, number one, the political answer is there's no reason to give it to him because there's no constitutional requirement for that. Okay. Because if you're going to give it to him, then you should give it to everyone, okay? Because that's the political answer, okay? The second thing is, if you're going to give him a cognitive test, what they mean when they say cognitive exam is they mean a neuropsychological battery, probably. Okay, but then why not give it to his opponent too, so you know who he's running against?
And why don't we give it to every member of
And then why everyone. Don't we give it to everyone, right? That's the proper answer, right? But the idea that he would say, no, someone who has nothing to hide, What was the answer? It was someone, I
someone
had
got, so, something.
It,
or,
it was like, if they have nothing to hide, then yes.
If you got people that have nothing to hide, hide nothing. So why not?
Yeah. So I'm going to go back to my question differently, though. Do you trust, do you guys trust, maybe Suzanne, that you're a psychologist, do you trust that Dr. Phil knows that does different testing, if you could talk about new cognition? Do you think that he know that answer and it preferred to say a political, I don't know, soundbite just so, to address it?
Like, right. I was saying, yes, he's a psychologist. He knows.
He knows.
He
do
knows
you think so? Do you really think so?
I think he does. I'm pretty sure he does.
I don't know.
He's not a stupid man. He's Dr. Phil isn't stupid. But I think the whole celebrity part of it has changed the way he answers things.
That was a politician who was speaking, not a psychologist.
Okay. Well, what about the second answer? Let's replay that real quick.
Dr. Phil again, what do you think of the increased popularity of polyamory and throuples?
It's insane.
Really?
Yeah. That doesn't work. I mean, people have enough trouble trusting one another in relationships as it is. If they're going to start adding in moving parts, that's not going to work.
Okay. So what about that? Because that's also a bad answer.
I mean, it's funny because wasn't he involved? Like, so if we look at polyamory, right, it's having multiple partners, being in love with multiple people, etc. Well, I've never done that, but didn't he admittedly have an affair in his late 30s while he was married?
Hold on, before you go too far, there's one distinction though. I don't think polyamory means that you're lying to your partner. It's not having an affair. So one of the principles of polyamory is that you have to be completely truthful with all partners. There's no cheating. They know that
they know about each other, relationship. Yes.
Right. So his answer was something to the sort of lying or cheating. Is definitely wrong about it. That's not polyamory. That's somebody that is unfaithful. There's difference.
So that's not the answer to the question. Is the point?
No,
right?
No.
He didn't answer the question.
Exactly.
Okay. And then they started arguing about divorce rates. And I happen to have a study here on divorce rates that's published in 2021. And I actually was surprised by this because I agreed with Bill Maher. I thought divorce rates were high. And what is actually true here is the divorce rates in the U.S. has declined in recent decades. In 1990, 19 people per 1,000 currently married individuals divorced compared to 15 per 1,000 in 2019. But the trend is different per age group. The divorce rate for younger people has declined since 1990, whereas the divorce rate among those 50 and older has more than doubled since 1990, which is really interesting to me. Hmm. The difference in divorce rates between those ages 15 and 24 and those ages 65 and older shrunk substantially, going from 47 per 1,000 compared to 2 per 1,000 in 1990 to 26 per 1,000 compared to 6 per 1,000 in 2019. Between 1990 and 2019, the divorce rates for those ages 15 to 44 increased for those ages 45 and older. So we're in that age. I'm in that age group now where the divorce rate goes higher. I thought that was fascinating. I thought for sure divorce rates, Bill Maher was spot on by this. But apparently he's not. Interestingly enough, What was even more interesting to me is that when Dr. Phil said that there are statistics on throuples, that is true. What he said is that they don't work. That is not true. Now, I'd love to see his statistics on that, probably, you know, compiled by, you know.
His research.
Probably compiled by his show, which is the epitome of dysfunction.
What's that? What's that?
Maury,
the right wing think tank, department, the family research center or whatever in Colorado that gives a ton of money to the right wing parties. But these two articles I found. I'm going to read the abstracts. Are the Archives of Sexual Behavior, published in 2022 and 2021. An empirical investigation on variations in outcomes associated with heterosexual adults' most recent mixed-sex threesome experience. This is Dimitri Reeds.
Dimitri Reed.
Research reveals that a substantial portion of North American adults reports interest and experience with mixed-sex threesomes, MSTs, as they call it. Sexual activity involving three people at the same time in which persons of more than one sex are present. Despite the prevalence of MST participation, little is known about the outcome of MST experiences. Thus, the current study assesses MST outcomes using various metrics, including the extent to which one's most recent MST met expectations, the likelihood of participation in MST again, and whether an orgasm was experienced. In addition, the extent to which one's sex, the sex of those involved, and the inclusion of one's romantic partner impacted outcomes was examined. Data from 276 heterosexual adults, mostly men, revealed that overall, adults reported fairly positive outcomes from their most recent MST, and that males reported more positive outcomes than did females, particularly when engaged with MSTs with two members of the other sex. In addition, MSTs involving one romantic partner resulted in more positive outcomes than did those with casual partners. These results confirm that MSTs can be a satisfying experience, particularly for heterosexual males and those participating with a romantic partner. So that's the first study. And the second one, I'm just going to read the last part of it, the last part of the abstract. Overall, these results indicate that MGTs, which are mixed gender threesomes, MGTs, are a common sexual behavior that often result in positive outcomes, especially among sexual minority individuals. So both of these research articles show that the results are interesting and are positive. So Dr. Phil is, based on this, is incorrect. Now, I'd love to see his research.
But, his pilot research.
I wish that he was better. I just wish he was better.
But hey, it sounds to me that that was his opinion, like a personal opinion. It didn't sound like a psychologist who would definitely say something more complex. More people have different, you know, pleasure or different aspiration or different ideal for happiness or for conformism. You know, so it's just a personal opinion.
But last word here. Last question: if you're going to have a show or going to be on TV and be known as Dr. First Name. So if you had a show called Dr. Steph or Dr. Suze.
Do not tune in.
Okay.
I do not like green. Wouldn't you?
Do not tune in on that show.
We should do a segment actually called Dr. Steph. That'd be great. If you had a show called Dr. Suze or Dr. Steph or Dr. D.
they call me D at work.
You know, like, wouldn't you take that opportunity to use your to use your degree to better use?
You mean to educate people? Yeah,
to educate people, to help people.
That's what we're doing, right?
Kind of like what we're doing here as best we can.
Because what you say, Carrie Walden, right? What you say as somebody who has a title. People really pay attention to that, right? It's not like somebody you pick up from, I don't know, not to compare people, but without the title, people would have different kind of trust level in that statement, right? So
that's right.
Your license and to say what you want to say.
And this war on expertise, by the way, I think, and not to say that he's part of this, but this decline, you know, when you see guys like him come on there and just spout off nonsense. Maybe that's part of the reason. And by the way, show called a show called Dr. D. This would be the opening music.
How about that D, baby?
Mental health tip of the daytime.
Day full of hiccups. Need a shake up? Listen up. It's the Psych Effect Podcast Mental Health Tip of the Day.
Mental Health Tip of the Day on Daylight Savings Day Time, brought to you by Daylight Savings Time Stinks. It's brought to you by nobody, but we lost an hour. It's brought to you by losing an hour.
Yes.
And today it's Suzanne. Go, Suzanne.
So, an older study kind of resurrected itself in the news again about how talking versus texting and if that creates any change in you and in the communications. And so what they wanted to see is if talking versus texting your mom made any type of difference. So for those of us who still have our moms around, you know, if we're stressed or whatever, we'll text or we'll call. But the studies showed that one was more effective than the other, and that the sound of your mom's voice increases oxytocin levels, which helps to reduce those feelings of stress, and reduces cortisol levels, which are the stress hormones that are produced. So texting did not have the same effect. And I think we've come to a world now, and I'm guilty of it as well, where it's easier to text somebody than it is just to pick up the phone and call and use your voice and hear their voice. And we lose a lot of things in text too. Even though we have emojis to try to convey nonverbal behavior, it's not the same. But they did find mama's voice had some comforting effect than other people's voices as well.
Interesting. So,
pick up the phone and call someone.
Specifically your mom.
That's
the mental health tip, is call your mom.
Well, that's assuming that you had secure attachment growing up. I mean, that's a different page.
That's
a whole different page.
But I can tell you today, my cortisol levels increased talking to my mom and my dad on the phone, because I'm sitting there trying to help them set up their little fitness bands, and they are not tech savvy, and they're yelling words I haven't heard out of their mouths in quite some time. And I don't know how many times the F-bomb came out of both of their mouths today. And so it was not a stress-reducing phone call with them today. But I'll call Mama later and see what happens.
probably more times than I said it talking about insurance today. I definitely don't call my mom often enough. So I definitely need less cortisol and more oxytocin in my system for that. Yes, call your mom. Mental health tip of the day. Thank you everyone for listening again. Like, subscribe, follow us, and leave comments, even if they're from Greeny, whatever your name is. Thank you.
Anyone's
for leaving
welcome
comments.
To leave comments. It's okay. We like to read them.
We like to read them, and maybe we'll read them on the air, just like we did today. We will see you in the next one. Bye, guys.
See ya. Bye.
Bye.
The previous podcast is for general informational purposes only and represented the individual opinions of Dr. Dimitri Bick, Dr. Stefan de Graaff, Dr. Suzanne Mignon, and the guests. It does not constitute the practice of medicine or other professional healthcare services and should not be taken as medical advice or an establishment of standard of care. No guarantee is given regarding the accuracy of any statements, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult your healthcare professional for any medical questions.